Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, it has been a long-held belief that the larger an organization gets, the slower it is to adapt to change. But in an increasingly digital world, does that belief still hold the merit it once did? Or should there be a new school of thought when it comes to the flexibility and adaptability of larger organizations? So to talk about this long-held belief, I have PayPal's Chief Product Architect and Senior Technologist, Arnold Goldberg, and Mercator Advisory Group's VP of Payments Innovation, Tim Sloan, to discuss what it takes for larger organizations to be flexible, and despite its size, how PayPal is still very much a nimble fintech. So without any further delay, let's start the show.
So Tim and Arnold, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. So Tim, I'd like to start with you today to kind of lead off our discussion in terms of what are the common perceptions of enterprise businesses as it relates to innovation, and how does that relate to innovation at startups?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. You know, I think contrary to popular opinion, that is probably based on the billions of venture funding that has gone into fintechs creating unicorns. The fact is that our recent research, especially around one particular area of fintech, API platforms, has clearly indicated that the innovation is taking place in some of the largest financial institutions in the marketplace, those enterprises that many would consider slow moving. And the fact is, those APIs align with what the enterprise is trying to do to be able to integrate the partners into their customers to better improve the services they can offer, and also, quite honestly, to make it more difficult for somebody to leave the fold. So where things align with a large enterprise, where technology or new capabilities align with the enterprise, they can move very quickly to embrace it when that's important to them. And so I think the real takeaway here is never rule out an industry giant.
No, that's certainly very interesting there, Tim. Now, Arnold, obviously with you being from PayPal, I'm sure that you've got some great insights into this as well too. Perhaps you could share with our audience.
Absolutely. And you know what I would say is, even before PayPal, I spent a number of years at startups in the Bay Area, and it helped create a frame of reference for how fast you can move as a company. And in the last 8 years of PayPal, much of what I was trying to do is reinvent that speed at scale. And you know, the beauty is that a company like PayPal and some of the bigger players in the industry is you have resources, you have partners that will love to work with you, and lots of years of experience and trial and error in trying some of these, ability to unlock opportunities. But you have to acknowledge as an enterprise that that's something you're going to go after. And what we found at PayPal to be quite influential in changing let's call it a little bit of a slower process to really an acceleration of innovation is to do away with what I would call traditional command and control structures and giving autonomy and context of the customer down to the teams that are going to be building the products and connecting with the customers. It's a very different model, but it's helped us really unleash a lot of the power that you're seeing in PayPal right now.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, a large enterprise has been in business for a while and has a great portfolio of partners, customers, accounts, and being able to leverage that is a huge advantage.
Excellent. Now, I think that, you know, kind of just to both of your answers to that, I think kind of the answer to the next question of how accurate is that perception is necessarily kind of it's more so on the false side of things. But obviously, that certainly depends upon the organization itself. But Arnold, I'd really like to kind of get your perspective on just, you know, do you believe that businesses are innovative, are being more innovative than commonly believed, kind of like looking at this overall myth that might be in the industry?
I think the larger companies that are being innovative and are accelerating, you know, through this crisis and have been set up properly to even adapt to this crisis, were ones that understood what assets they had and how to leverage them. And two that come to mind right off the top of my head is again, just drawing some of the parallels between what you have at startups that everyone says move so much faster than let's call it some of the incumbents. But those incumbents have scale. They have customers. They have customers that if you're doing it well, you as a company are connected to. You have a mission to fulfill for or on behalf of your customers. And I would say the other thing is resources. Almost by definition, you've got a big company that has a lot of resources, a lot of opportunity to marshal those resources. Really, at the moment of focus, you know, how effectively do you as a company take all those resources across those different organizations and bring them to bear to solving a problem? I think that is where big companies become tremendously innovative or fail to be innovative. Yeah, it's a pivotal point.
Great points. You know, you look at how very large businesses were able to, retail businesses were able to pivot given the pandemic and start to enable order to pick up capabilities. They can move very quickly to support their customers and their customer needs. Typically, the only real challenge is if there's a new technology or a decision that has to be made to move to a new platform that doesn't necessarily leverage the large enterprise's existing assets relative to the technology platform and developers. But other than that, there's nothing to stop large enterprises from being able to move quickly when they have to.
Now, Arnold, I'd like to bring up something that you said in your previous answer here, and you said the term being set up properly. So I'd really like it if we could dive into a little bit deeper and kind of get a little bit more clarity on what you mean by that in terms of, are you talking about being set up properly from an organizational structure, or is it that the organization needs to have a certain technical stack? Is it a little bit of both? So could you add a little bit of clarity of what exactly it is that you mean by being set up properly?
It's a little bit of both. And let me just give you an example. We, of course, have lots of interesting moments that happened in the last 6 months with the pandemic hitting this worldwide scale. And we as a company had a roadmap of innovation that we thought was strategic for us that we had to very explicitly acknowledge that it was no longer correct. Touchless was something we really wanted to do in the future, but all of a sudden it became a hugely important thing for our customers, especially our small merchants who had to change their interaction model with the consumers of the world, and we needed to be there to help. And so we pivoted really quickly within the order of weeks to scrap our existing roadmap and to reconstitute a roadmap that would help our customers in this new world order. And that's what I'm talking about. It's organizational, it's culture, as well as a understanding that from top to bottom and all across the company, that there are going to be moments like this and it's okay. And I think that was a very explicit choice that we had to make. And I think most companies that reacted effectively had to do a bit of both, set up themselves organizationally, as well as be very explicit as to how they're going to react and what the purpose was going to be to serve the customers that they had.
That's a fascinating point because, you know, I talk about the large companies having assets that they can bring to bear. But the fact is, the real challenge for a large company is often organizational. You know, you build up silos, they're not communicating across those silos. So it takes a nimble organization that is able to cut across silos, communicate the key strategies that are important to the company, and organize itself around those, which often means reorganizing the enterprise. That can be very challenging.
All right, so I think really kind of what I'm getting from a lot of this is that really culture does play a large influencing factor of if big organizations are able to kind of adopt these new approaches or be able to pivot and react. And it sounds like though PayPal really kind of has this has a great culture to be able to enable all of this innovation here. But while we're speaking about innovation itself, I'd love to get from your perspective, Arnold, what are the key areas that you believe are the most helpful that fuel innovation?
Yeah, there's a few, and I think it's so fascinating you bring up culture because I think it's always an underemphasized point, but there's some other points as well. But of course, all of it starts with people and the way people behave within a company it could be characterized as culture. And so you want that as a substrate, I think, to even enable any of these other things. But again, going back to the theme, which is how do big companies win in this landscape or any others, especially against their supposed more nimble competitors that are coming out of the startup ecosystem. I think there's this underappreciated aspect of partnerships. And for PayPal, as an example, we've done 40 partnerships with leaders across the financial and the technology ecosystem because of our scale. And it's mutual. The partners that we have are also large and very strategic to us. And so I think having those partnerships, not just in the financial ecosystem and the private sector, but also the public sector. We spend a lot of time not just with regulators and working with them globally, but also in the public sector. You know, the best example was what we did with the US PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, where we had a very close relationship with the US government and were able to very quickly become part of that program and also most importantly, get the money to the customers that really needed it, get them to the people who deserved and needed the protection that was coming out of the government from the $2 billion loans. So partnerships, very important, but going back to the culture piece, really allowing teams to pivot based on customer need. And again, the moment of crisis during the coronavirus was the fact that no more physical contact was safe. And so we said, okay, QR codes as a way to do touchless was something that we needed to go pivot and go do, and something that was going to take, and you hear this story, I think, from other large companies as well, something that was going to take 6-9 months actually took 3 weeks, took 2 months. And that compression of time and that focus, you've heard the saying, there's, never waste a crisis. I think those moments where you actually deliver for the customers with a high degree of passion, high degree of fidelity to what they wanted, take a moment and actually understand, like, what was the magic there? Like, how do you bottle that up to repeat it in a way that doesn't require the heroics? I think having those type of innovative and introspective moments together really can help you understand what your culture is and what it should possibly become. The last piece I'll make, and I know I've been going on for a while, but the last piece that I think is a differentiated advantage, we talked about the resources, we talked about the customers that you might have as a big company, is data. Behavioral data, transactional data, whatever. What I found in bigger companies, that data gets siloed, and the data wants to be free, and the data can inform better outcomes. And so as you figure out ways to get the data to spread across your company, to enable better outcomes, it's very important to break down those silos, not just of people and organizations, as Tim was mentioning, but also the data.
Boy, I can't agree enough with that. So if you pick one particular aspect of the payments industry, such as the fraud detection platforms, we've learned that machine learning tools work better and can make better decisions with more data. So you see the fight right now, the battle being who's going to be able to be the first to collect consumer behavioral data and device data, be able to collect data from the merchant, be able to have acquirers across multiple merchants, be able to get network data, and be able to get account data from the issuers, all combined within that platform to be able to greatly improve its ability to detect that fraud without positives. And it's a real battle going on right now. So absolutely, the new technology makes data king.
And what I would say, Tim, just to layer on that a bit, it just struck a chord speaking around fraud. We knew that the shift, especially in the US, from online to to retail was going to allow us to, especially with the advent of EMV and you know, some of the chips that you're finally seeing that, of course, Asia and Europe have had for many years, you know, having card present was going to allow us to diminish the fraud, and the fraud was going to move online. We're actually seeing that happen more because more transactions are going online because there's more touchless interactions happening. So it's been an interesting phenomenon to see even more pressure going into that that channel from a fraud perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And we still have a ways to go. I mean, we still have our silos within the payments industry, you know, the merchant from the acquirer, from the payments network to the processors and issuers. So there are still many divisions that prevent that data from being shared, but it's coming together. It's coming together pretty fast. PayPal has a unique position within that.
Yeah, I certainly agree to all of those points there. I think they were fantastic. But for my last question here, Arnold, I'd really like to get kind of your take on this, right? Because this whole time we're really talking about innovation, and innovation certainly is fantastic within the industry, but innovation needs to really have or needs to add value really to be relevant. So how does what we were talking about today really translate to the work that you're doing with merchants and to your consumers?
Yeah, it's a great question. And what I would start it with is one of the reasons I've stayed at PayPal 8 years here in the Valley is a reasonably long time, but one of the reasons I love this company so much is we have a purpose. We're purpose driven. And I think companies who have a purpose, that is a overarching philosophy that many of the employees of that company then can latch onto to get equally engaged and passionate. And so, you know, our purpose is to serve the underserved around the world and to be the payments platform of choice for merchants globally. And the fact that we talk about that constantly and it influences our day-to-day lives, that we will actually make our customers better because of the work we're doing, really creates a deep level of engagement. And then what happens is this, you know, this epidemic, the coronavirus comes around, and now we have to have a very tactical purpose to help our customers. And so you talk about pivoting quickly from, as we talked about at the beginning, from a roadmap that had, you know, a lot of inspiring things to a new purpose for a very short period of time to really help our customers out. That is the foundation that you build on to say, we're going to go do this no matter what it takes. And so for merchants, being able to help them keep their businesses going, right? So that is, I think, a fantastic purpose to really drive the level of work that we had to go do to accelerate some of the things that we needed to do, whether that's through the loans that we enabled to them or to accepting payments in ways that they never would have been able to before. That was something that we were able to accelerate and almost pivot in a really quick manner. Same thing for our consumers. As you mentioned, you know, we're a two-sided network. And so whether it's for our 27 million merchants or 325 million consumers, every day we come to work. Well, now we don't come to work. We, I guess, go to our home office and come to work and just engage on building amazing solutions for them to continue navigating through this crisis that we're on.
Well, the proof is in the pudding. Consumer research shows that PayPal has established itself as a very trusted mark. It drives consumers to trust merchants that they're working with. And so everything you're doing is paying off. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Excellent. Yeah, and certainly to echo Tim's point there, certainly very much congratulations. But thank you very much, Arnold and Tim, for taking the time today for speaking to me about enterprise businesses and innovation. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Arnold.